First, I'd like to really apologize for going so long yesterday. I didn't realize the time. And today, I know a lot of you have long journeys to make, and we'll finish without going too long. First, I'd like to meditate a minute. Every person, every one of us has two kinds of energies in us. One is a man's energy, and the other is a woman's energy. And each of us has both. They travel in special channels throughout our body that we can't see. And one of them is much stronger than the other. And then as you form in your mother's womb, the channels form, the energy starts moving in the channels, and then your body forms like clay around the channels. And depending on which energy is stronger, male or female, you take on the clay forms into a man's body or woman's body. But as you go through your practices, and especially in the higher teachings, secret teachings, then the two energies begin to flow equally within you. And then the clay starts to reform as a result. And if we can practice very well, then our body changes later in life, and it becomes like light. Those bodies of beings of light, they don't have any sign of man or woman. They are inside of them, both together, whole, like in union all the time. Both the energies are equal, and they flow into each other, combine. And the feeling of that is as if inside of one person, a man and a woman were making love all the time within a single person. They feel that way constantly. And those bodies don't have any stomach or heart or lungs. They are pure light. Outwardly, otherwise, they look like us, but all the pieces are made of light. When it is useful, they will send an image of a body to different places to teach people. I thought it's good to mention. I think it could be disconcerting to feel that energies becoming equal within you. But it's something very holy, and it's something to look forward to. In the meantime, we are in a very hard, desperate, deadly place, which is called the desire realm, the realm of desire. His Holiness the First Dalai Lama says this is called the realm of desire because people are very attracted to solid, hard things like food. People are very much attached to gross pleasures like sexual activity. And the beings here in our realm we very much identify with the predominant energy. We think I am a man or I am a woman. And then we feel a strong attachment to the energy in another person. And so some people are attracted to man energy, and they feel comfortable around men. And other people, men or women, feel attracted to a woman's energy, and they feel comfortable around women. In my lifetime, we've been lucky to see a pattern changing. This used to be a whole civilization that was dominated by men's energy. Even back 10-15,000 years in the ancient culture of Indo-Europeans and the other great culture, which is our source, the Hebrew culture, it was a man's energy. The name for God was a sky father, Jupiter. And that that custom had passed down for many thousands of years. The man's energy stronger. There are something like 4,500 exquisite, beautiful texts in our ancient canon. Of those 4,500 ancient books, which are the ancient core of our lineage, I believe there's only 2 or 3 which were spoken by women. But in our days, we are so lucky, times are changing. For example, we can now have a choice if we want to go to a physician, a doctor. We can go to a man or a woman. It wasn't that way when I was younger. And many of us, myself included, I feel more comfortable with a woman physician. I appreciate the gentleness and the sincerity. Some people equally feel comfortable with a man's energy. They like a man doctor who will speak with firmness and decisiveness and a man's approach. But if half the people in our country would feel more comfortable with a woman teacher, a woman lama, a woman guru, then I think the time has come that those whose bodies have a woman energy for now should prepare themselves. And I think here in the Diamond Mountain and in the retreat and in the teaching by the caretakers and other people, women lamas are coming forth. It's a joy to see, because you know many people will be attracted to their energy, and more people will be happy and comfortable to learn from them. And it's good to see here so many people whose energy is woman's for now are serious and doing deep retreats, studying hard. I would like to just express my happiness and beg you to prepare yourselves. The time will come quickly when people will come to you. They will need your help. And it's not enough just to be a woman. People don't go to a woman doctor, physician, just because she's a woman. it is important to them that she is, but they also want a good doctor. If the woman hasn't been trained well, if she can't really cure people, then the people won't come. But if she has taken many years of hard work to take her woman's energy, the sweet energy, and then train it, direct it with hard work, hard studies, hard meditations, then she is complete doctor for the people who would like to come to her. So I ask you, those whose energy is that for now, stronger woman's energy, get ready, work hard. I think this place is a good place for that. We've been talking about things you can see and things you can't see. The things we can't see are very much more important. Where did we really come from? Now, what are we supposed to do while we're here? What will we be like in the end? What are we growing into? If you could see these things, you could really help people. It's what everyone needs to know. It's what everybody wants to know. And you can do it. You can see it. People have done it. What kind of people? We see in history, a short, very, very short history that we know about. It seems like only very good people, very special people, get to see these things. We have a record of Moses, Holy Moses. And he met a divine being. It has become almost just a legend. People aren't sure if he really did. There are stories in the Bible about Jesus telling his disciples about his death. They rebuke him. They say, "Don't talk like that. People will get scared." He seems to have seen the future, but this has also become like a legend. Most people don't really believe it. We have many, many many stories of the early Indian saints meeting divine beings. We have many accounts in the scriptures of Lord Buddha and his disciples seeing the future. We have stories of Lord Buddha going to other worlds to teach his parents who had died. People take these to be legends. We have records of Jetsongkhapa 600 years ago meeting with angels named especially Manjushri and studying with them. It's extremely hard to believe that a normal human being could in one life, and not a very long life, compose 10,000 pages of scripture. Every single page is extraordinary. Every single page is more than the equal of Shakespeare, Aristotle, Einstein. It seems hard to believe he wasn't coached by a divine being, but again, it's like a legend. There's a story of the 13th Dalai Lama, His Holiness, who ordained Holy Lama Ken Rinpoche. There's a very heartbreaking letter, public letter, which he wrote 30 to 40 years before Tibet was lost, describing how it would be lost exactly if people didn't change. All of these people had one thing in common. Moses' meeting with a divine being, I think, may have been the most important few minutes in the history of our civilization. He was presented with a list of actions, and the list was a list about not harming other people. And that list has become the core of whatever civilized behavior we are capable of. Jesus was constantly talking about being kind to others, treating them like you would yourself. And the same message was the constant concern of the great saints of India, Lord Buddha, Jetsongkhapa, His Holiness the 13th Dalai Lama. Why is it that only good people get to see the future? Why is it that only good people get to meet angels or holy beings? To understand this, you have to understand, I think, emptiness. We spoke about five different frames of mind that you will go through in your journey to see the events of the future, and in your attempt to see all the living beings there are. We compared it to going from an island to an ocean, to a great dry land, to the foothills of a mountain, and then up onto the mountain. I would like to speak about the emptiness of this process. We don't have much time. It's something you should think about later. You can read the little text and maybe later get a tape or a transcript. Because it's a little bit hard. But try to think, where are the edges between things? Where are the edges between things? Where does the island stop and the water begin? Where is the line or the edge between the water and the dry land? Where do the foothills start? Exactly. What's the line? Where's the edge of the foothills and where do the mountains start? There are big trees here, I think. Oak trees. Look at the trees. Look at the sky around the top of the trees. Where does the tree stop and the sky begin? Where is the edge between the tree and the sky? Where does the tree touch the sky? Then your mind says very quickly, easily, oh, it's at the very edge. What's the very edge look like? Oh, it's where the very tip of the tree touches the very tip or the edge of the sky. It's where the two colors touch. How big is the place where the two colors touch? Oh, it's tiny. It's the very edge of the blue and the very edge of the green. How tiny is the edge? It's tiny. It's as fine as a line. Can you see the edge? Yes, I can. So it has some thickness to it. If it didn't have thickness, you couldn't see it, right? Say, right. So it's not the real edge, is it? Because there will be parts of the edge which are closer to the real edge, and parts of the edge which are farther from the real edge. Any edge you can show me can be split to a finer edge. Listen carefully. There is no edge around things. There is no edge where the blue meets the green. If you think carefully, go back over it later. The edge you think you see cannot be there. It's impossible. There's no edge where the land meets the water. There's no edge where the water starts up onto the land again. There's no edge where the foothills start. It can't be there. That's the first indication that what you think is there is not there, and it's not coming from what you thought it was coming from. Then we spoke about how to see the future, what you will be, the beautiful thing you will become, and see it directly. We said first you should have innocence, and you can start to believe like a child. Does it really work? Did he tell us the right way? No. It doesn't work. Why? Many innocent people are hurt badly. There are many tragedies involving innocence. Innocence doesn't lead to faith and seeing the glimmering of a great vision you will have later. Innocence doesn't have that power. Some innocent people see the beginning of truth. Some innocent people can see the beginning of a vision which goes through all time and space. It is the, for them, the beginning. But some innocent people just fail. So innocence doesn't cause the beginning of this. But surely learning must help. The second step we talked about. No, learning can't do anything. Many people learn and only get frustrated. Many others just get more proud. The learning hurts them. It makes them much worse than they were before. Learning doesn't have any power to help you see every living creature and save them. Something deeper, there's a deeper power. There's a deeper energy. But surely questioning, debating, thinking must help. Surely contemplation must help bring the vision. No. The process of debate, questioning, inquisition has turned many people rotten, proud, almost violent, competitive, jealous. Contemplation by itself has no power to give you this vision. Something deeper is underlying. There's a deeper seed. But surely meditation, sitting quietly in my little hut, focusing deeply and single-pointedly, this must be a way to see the future. This must be a way to break through the curtains, see all living beings. Everyone says this is a way to meet holy beings, speak with them. No. Many people meditate, they get frustrated. They get more angry than they were before. Many people sit for weeks or months thinking about someplace else. Worrying about who might be thinking about them, the great meditator. Meditation doesn't have the power to bring you these visions, these direct insights, direct perception of the future. There's a deeper seed at work. That seed produces the visions. The deeper seed produces the ability to see what will come hundreds of years from now. There are people who can see hundreds of years away. There are people who can see what they will become directly. Some people will say, that's wonderful. I didn't feel like doing all that work. It's a very beautiful thing. The deep seed, the real seed, will make you want to do the work. The seed that gives you the vision, really, the eyes within your heart, which are ultimate eyes, that seed creates the learning. That seed creates the innocence. That seed creates the contemplation and the meditation. And it always does that just before the vision. So you have to do those things. Because you will do those things. You have to do those things because you will do those things just before you see. And that will be because of a deeper seed. From hidden to obvious. You don't go through any steps to get there. The steps don't even exist. There's a beautiful path that goes from Holy Lama Kenrinpoche's driveway to his house. It was made by some of his dear students. You should look at it sometime. It's just stones, flat stones. And we are like people who have a handful of and we set them down one by one, and then we walk on them. They don't exist there in front of you. When you go through the path and you finally see what you will become, the future, and you meet holy beings, it's only stones that your mind is laying before your mind. Your mind lays down the darkness. Then your mind lays down the idea, maybe I could see the future. Then your mind lays down the two true images. And then your mind lays down the real thing. Your mind creates the future. Your mind creates every planet and every creature on it. Your mind creates holy beings, and then your mind serves it up to your mind. They are all only images. Saying that when I see the future, it will only be a picture in my mind. That's right. You're saying when I meet a holy being, my next door neighbor now, this is only an image in my mind. Right. You're saying when I heard you talk the last 3 days, I started to feel like I could do it. I felt like, for the first time, maybe someone could see the future directly and see holy beings directly. Are you telling me you are only describing an image? That's right. So they don't exist. No, that's wrong. They are images, and that's why they exist. But if they're just images, then they're not real. Go stand in front of a car, a fast car. See if the car breaks your legs. This is an image in your mind. A deep seed in your mind has created the image. And it hurts. So who cares if it's an image, if it works, like a real car hitting my legs? What's the point of telling me it's an image? We can have images that present themselves as images. If you haven't seen the future and I say, imagine the future now, what you will be, come. Try to imagine what you will be in the end, a holy being. If you haven't seen that, then you start to make an image. But you know it's an image. And if I say, look at my hand now, you form an image. Your mind forms an image. It's an image of an outside thing. And so it's an outside thing. Do outside things exist? No, only images. So there are no outside things. Of course there are. There are the things which your mind forms an image as an outside thing. Why are you telling us this? What's the difference? If it looks like an outside image, if my mind takes it that way, who cares? I'd like to introduce an old friend who's here. He was with us in New York during the classes, and he kindly came all around the world with us. Even in Mongolia, Ireland, other holy lands. I brought him. He's the best emptiness teacher in the world. All over the world, people understood emptiness from him. What is this thing? If you're smart, you'll say, red and white stick. If you're new, you'll say, no, that's a pen. Don't you guys see it's a pen? Wait, later. Your eye only has the power to see shapes and colors. Your eye has no other power. Your eye can't see a pen. It takes a mental process to decide this is a pen. Your eye can only report to the brain, we have a shape here. And brain says, what's it look like? And eye says, oh, it's a cylinder. And then brain says, well, what color is it? And the eye says, well, the top is red and the bottom is white. And it's connected to five fat little sticks right now. And the mind thinks it over and says, I bet he's holding up that stupid pen again. So it's the mind that makes this into a pen. The mind forms a picture of a pen. The mind forms the edges around it. Arbitrarily, based on a few clues. But if this were a pen from its own side, and then if an animal from a different realm, a being from a different realm, the only other realm you and I can see now, if you're a normal person, I don't know if there is, is an animal realm. So if a dog ran in here and said, and he looks up at this red and white stick, he wouldn't see a pen. He would probably just think, oh, maybe it's something to chew on. I'll try to get it from him later. Your natural tendency, which is the source of all pain, is to think that because he's a dog, he sees something to chew on. That's not quite right. He's a dog because he sees something to chew on. He's a dog because he has deep seeds in his mind to see this otherwise neutral stick as something to chew on. And we are human because when we look at the same stick, we think it's something to write with. Which one is it? The natural tendency is to say, it's a pen, and the stupid dog is ruining my pen. And when you take it away, the dog says, the stupid human is pulling away my chew thing again. So, who's right? They're both right. Each being's mind is forcing them to see something. That's the emptiness of this thing. It's not a pen from its own side. It's not something to chew on from its own side. Even when we see ourselves, even when we look down, even when we say something or do something, we see a person or we see a mind because that person or that mind has been painted into the picture that we are painting. Nothing has any quality of its own. Nothing. Your body is not what it looks like from its own side. Your mind is forming that image. Even your mind isn't what it feels like from its own side. Your mind is making you feel your mind this way. The mind of the moment before. Because of deep seeds is making you hear your thoughts now. Everything is under the control of these deep seeds. Nothing has any nature of its own. Nothing is anything by itself. It's the key to seeing what you will be. It's the key to seeing every living, sweet creature there is on every world. It's the key to meeting holy angels. If you find out the deep seed you need, you can do all of these things, I swear it. Because they don't exist from their own side. We learned a special meditation. Before we take a break, I'd like to practice. We said, learn to quietly, secretly, as you go through your day, meeting with other people, or sitting alone. Sometimes, close your eyes, reach out to the right side. Imagine that you can touch the first of a long line of living creatures in the whole universe, and you are comforting them. I'm coming. I'm working very hard. Actually, I'm very close, and I know it. Then sometimes reach behind you. Imagine that the sweet, holy teacher, your main teacher from your last life, is touching your hand. Now, a third meditation added tonight. You know the way you sit in front of your altar or on your airplane and say quietly but out loud, when I make this special motion to my left, it means I'm trying to touch one of the holy angels who are around me that I cannot see now. They have two parts. One is that beautiful self-making love body we talked about, of light. But their core try to feel, think about their body, or think about their core. And then one day that seed will grow in your mind. You will see them. You will talk to them. You will see their real nature. It will change you forever. Then reach out your hand to the front and get some refreshments. And then come back, and I will really finish quickly after that. We said that your mind was painting your world like a workman laying down stones of a path and then walking on them. The mind creates an image and serves it up to the mind. But the mind is helpless. The mind is in powerful hands. The mind can only do what it's told to do. The mind can only paint what it's told to paint. We don't have a choice in the present moment. There are deeper seeds. Those seeds absolutely dictate everything around us and even how our minds sound and think. Try to understand. This is a stick. If you have seeds in your mind, you will see it as a pen, and you will grasp deeply hard. Your heart will insist that this is a pen. It's hard to even imagine how it looks like to a dog. It's hard to admit that what the dog sees is just as real. This is not a pen. And it's not something to chew on. It's only what those deep seeds make you see. Try to understand what I say next. The quality of being into the future. The quality of being something already past is exactly the same. You have ceased to be split into three times. We have ceased to be limited to a present moment. We have ceased to perceive time in a linear, sequential fashion. We have ceased to divide all time into the future, which we are blind to, deadly blindness. We have ceased to forget the past and not even be able to see what we were. And we have ceased to be stuck in a single instant of infinite time. These are only images. These are only images thrown up to your mind by your seeds in your mind. Time doesn't have to be that way. Time is not self-existing. Time doesn't exist from its own side any more than pens do. Holy beings don't have a word for past, future, present. They just see everything now. And the seeds in their minds force them to see it. Try to understand what I say. There's no far or near. Being here, being close to here, and being far from here are only images that your mind forces you to see, like the image of a pen. They don't exist. Far, near, here don't exist. We have seeds in our mind which force us to see these divisions. They don't exist. If we could identify the way to make stronger enough seeds, we wouldn't have to live in a box and die like that. Your mind will come to see all time. Your mind will come to see all the places there are in every moment that you live. You can save people. We have a choice. We can either die in this little box called now, a moment, or we can live forever with beautiful holy beings, and we can see and travel to the places where suffering people need us who are stuck in their own boxes. We have all this capability. We have all this capacity because things are empty. Things are produced by seeds in your mind. It's true that a pen feels and writes like a pen, whether it's really outside or whether it's an image, that it's no different. But if you know it's an image, then you can change it. You can plant new seeds in your mind, powerful seeds. This is what all of us have to do. The choice is death. The choice is letting down all the countless beings in your world who are waiting for you. They are waiting for you. Each person here will save the people in their world. Stop thinking it's someone else. It's you. How do I plant the seeds? There's only one seed. There's only one thing that will make your meditation work. There's only one thing that will make your learning work. It's the seed below all other seeds. Being kind to other people. We are stuck in a box called the present moment. We are almost crippled, blind. We can't see anything that's important because our kindness is so small. I'm not being poetic. I'm not being speaking in metaphors. I'm not trying to give you some warm, fuzzy feeling. This is a difference between death and life with holy beings. Our kindness is too small. It plants seeds in our mind that make us small. I watch the ants. They come to a huge stone near our porch. It's huge because it's kind of high for them. It's 2 feet high, maybe. And they walk into the stone about an eighth of an inch from the edge. And they climb over the stone rather than walking around. They struggle desperately up 2 feet and then desperately down 2 feet, 4 feet, when they could walk around an eighth of an inch. They couldn't see. Holy beings look at us, sadly, in the same way. We can't see. The people who would help us to see are like ants who get up to lecture the other ants. Come on, guys, you could just walk around the rock. I don't know what you're talking about. We just go over. How kind do I have to be to see those things? I really want to see those things. I get a sense from your voice that it's possible. How big is your kindness? Where's the edge of your kindness? Some people, and me, I feel like that sometimes. They have a strange kindness. It only goes halfway down their body. They take care of the mouth. They stuff the mouth with nice, sweet things. They are kind to the mouth, and then it hurts the rest of the body. The edge of their kindness only goes to their throat. They will eat something which is kind to their mouth and hurts the rest of their body. People who smoke have a similar kind of kindness. They are kind to their throats or their mouths, and they are killing the rest. Their kindness, the edge or the line of their kindness, only goes down to their throat. There are other people whose kindness only goes as far as their sexual organs. To please the organ, to please a few inches of their body, they will risk the life of the rest of the body. They will risk a disease that has no cure for a few moments of kindness to their organ. They will destroy the body that holds the organ. Their kindness only goes a few inches on their bag of skin. Then there are many people whose kindness goes to the whole bag of skin. They are kind to their own bag of skin. They clothe and feed their own bag of skin. They wash their own bag of skin with special love and attention. And other bags of skin should try to work it out the best they can. I don't care. I want the best for my bag of skin. My bag of skin should have pretty clothes. My bag of skin's hair should be washed nicely. Some people stretch their edge of their kindness further. They take a wife or a husband or a boyfriend or a girlfriend. And because the two bag of skins can stay together and keep warm, or because the two bags of skin eat in the same room, then their kindness will stretch to both bags of skin. And my husband or wife should have the best. And similar with other relatives. Then other people's kindness will go further to the bag of skin that came out of their bag of skin. This is my child. This bag of skin came from my bag of skin. This child is special. This child needs attention. This child needs better things. In the scripture, a mother's love is given as the most powerful. But it can be a very selfish thing if the edge of the kindness only goes to their own children. It can be one of the saddest things in the world. Are you telling me if the child next door were being beaten, if the child next door were being abused, you wouldn't do something? If their bag of skin didn't come out of your bag of skin, they will answer, "What do you think I am? Animal? Of course I would do something. I would go next door. I would talk to the parents. I would try to help." And if a bag of skin were traveling in a car in front of your house, and if that car hit another car, and that bag of skin went through the windshield and was bleeding, and you could help, would you help that bag of skin? Of course I would. I'm not crazy. If I could help them, if I could stop the bleeding, if I were trained to help others, of course I would help them. And if the accident took place on the next street over in your neighborhood, would you run and help? If everyone was depending on you and waiting for you, if the person were bleeding enough, even if their bag of skin was different, even if their bag of skin was farther away, would you run? Of course I would run. And if there was a child next door who was hungry, didn't have enough food, would you put some of your food in that bag of skin? Or would you continue to overfeed the bags of skin in your own house? Of course I would share my food. And if the child were on the next street or across town, would you go and give them food? I guess so. How far? What if in another town? What if in another state? What if they lived on the other side of the world? How far does your kindness go? I don't know about the other world, other side of the world thing. They're pretty far away. These are the days of the internet. These are the days of CNN. I can give you the names of children who are hungry in Sarah Monastery. I can give you the names of holy monk teachers who have tuberculosis from not enough food. You can send your extra money. Talk to John Brady. He's here. Geshing Ong Rigdul can give it to them. It takes 5 minutes. We're not in a big world anymore. We are in a small world. You can't ignore. Your kindness has to be bigger. They are as good as next door. You can't forget them. You can't pretend they're not hungry anymore. You can't go on being kind to one or two or three bags of skin and ignoring the others. You will never see anything. Because the karma, the seed you plant when you're kind to one or two bags of skin, is very cruel. You will die in that bag of skin. It will always be that small. You will never see the things that are important. You can't see them now because of the lie of the bags of skin. What about the children in Africa? Oh, they're very different. Oh, there are towns, cities, where half the people are dying of AIDS. You know it. But they're much different. They don't speak a language at all like mine. How different is different? If the person who is dying in a car accident in front of your house looks different, will you ignore them? If they speak a different language, will you ignore them? If your own bag of skin produced a bag of skin that only had one arm or one leg, would you ignore it because it looked different? No, of course I would take care of it. Then why do you ignore the bags of skin with four legs? They're different than me. How different do they have to be? Where is the edge of your kindness? Where does it stop? Oh, if they have four legs but they are cuddly, if they lick my face when I feed them, then my kindness will go that far. What if they're big and ugly and fat and moo all the time? Will your kindness go to them too? Or will you kill them for their skins? Will you take care of a baby? Of course I'd take care of a baby. No, you shouldn't. They're small. That doesn't matter. Small doesn't matter. It can feel. It has feelings. Then take care of the other small creatures. How small? How about mice? Okay, but no smaller. How about insects? They are too different. They are too small. They don't speak my language at all. If you live in the desert with the animals, you will see something. We, Christy and I, were sitting on the porch. We set out your lovely cookies for them. And they eat throughout the day. They sneak under the fence where we left a big hole on purpose, and in the gate, and they come all day. And we noticed something strange, very strange. They started to come only when we are sitting on the porch. We only sit on the porch for a few minutes a day. They seem to be waiting. There's a rabbit. There's a coyote. There are many birds. They could eat all day long, but they come to eat when we are there. It struck me one day, this beautiful rabbit, he would eat the cookies and then the grass, in miles of grass, and I realized he's lonely. He's just lonely, and he's afraid. And the coyote is lonely, and he's afraid. Outside of the fence, it's just killing. They go to their homes at night. There's a squirrel who came and ripped all the cushions off our chair and stuffed it in her house, in the ground, for her children. They have homes. They go to bed at night. They get lonely. They appreciate some nice chocolate chip cookies. They're just like us. So, why not be kind to them? Why do you put an edge on your kindness? That border of your kindness is your death. That border, the limit of your kindness is the limit of your vision. It creates the seeds which make us blind. Those people, holy people that I mentioned, Moses, Jesus, Lord Buddha, the early Indian saints, the great lamas of Tibet, they overcame their blindness. They saw holy beings, holy places, because they were kind to everything. And that kindness put seed in their minds that destroyed the curtains. It destroyed the edges of the little box we live in. I'm not being poetic. I'm not being nice. This is just true. So if you open up your refrigerator and there are two donuts there to eat, and you can't get to the store tomorrow, would you leave one for tomorrow or not? How far does your kindness go into the future? Oh, I would leave one if I wasn't feeling kind of like eating both of them, because tomorrow me will want one. So your kindness can go into the future. You have to make your kindness, the edge of your kindness has to go far, even into the future. We have a problem in our country. We are kind to the current generation at the expense of future generations. We know we are using up things too fast. We know we are making our earth dirty. But our kindness is not big enough to go into the future. We can't be kind to people we've never met. We can't be kind to people who aren't born yet. And if I tell you that there are worlds that you can't see, there are realms all around us, you can see them one day. One day in a single minute or two of absolute inner vision clarity, with your eyes that are in your heart, you will see every world there is. You will see every living being who lives on them. You have to take care of them too. Are you telling me my kindness has to extend to some imaginary planet you're talking about that I can't even see, and that no one around me has ever seen? Are you telling me if my kindness doesn't reach to people who haven't been born for, oh, who may not be born for 10 or 10,000 years? Are you telling me it's my responsibility to learn to be kind to them also? It's like the disciple who turned to Jesus and said, you expect me to take care of all my brother's needs also? You expect me to give him all my food? You expect me to worry about what he's going to wear? You expect me to take care of everything this other person needs? And Jesus said, of course. It's what you're here for. It's the only thing we are supposed to do. We have to take care of all the beings we can see. We have to take care of all the beings we can't see. We have to take care of all the beings around us now. And our kindness has to go ahead in the future to all the people who will come. It's what you're here for. Your heart knows it. I'm not telling you something you don't know. We just kind of forget sometimes. So what will happen if my kindness gets this big? No limit, no edge. Tse me shi, the four immeasurables. It means the four edgelesses. then the seas in your mind will be perfect. Do you expect me to feed all the people in India or Africa? No, you can't. I'm not talking about that. It's a big difference between wanting to and doing it. Lord Buddha couldn't do it. Jesus couldn't do it. But they were perfect. Why? Because they wanted to, and they were willing to, and they gave everything they could give. That's enough. What will happen to me if I do what you say? What will happen to me if my kindness goes beyond my own bag of skin and the bags of skin that live in my house? You will become the savior of countless beings. You will become like the Jesus of your own world. I swear you will. It's what you want to do. It's what you were meant to do. You are going to do it now. How long will it take? Not long. You're very close. The wind is blowing hard here. Why do you think? The winds inside you are coming close. They are running. They didn't run before. Oh, don't be superstitious. It's just a wind. The wind is an image. The image of the wind is created by the winds inside you. The energy of man and woman, the other holy energies in you are coming together. You are very close. The wind is blowing in honor of you. Last meditation. There will come a day when you see ahead. You will see yourself as you will be. It's a joy. Imagine seeing yourself being the Jesus or the Buddha or the Moses of your people, of your whole world, of many worlds. You will be. It's not crazy or prideful to think it. It's your destiny, and it's a joy. One day you will see ahead, and you will see yourself. Something very beautiful. Yourself as you will be, if you are not already, is watching you now. Yourself as you will become, the savior of countless living creatures, is watching you now. Time doesn't matter to him or her. So sometimes when you remember this last talk and these last words, then you put your hand out to the front. And yourself will look upon you and be very happy. Oh, I remember. That was when I first believed what I would become. And your future self is watching you now. Put out your hand. And he or she or them are very happy. And they are always watching you and waiting. They know what you're going to be. So, reach out to them sometimes. Make a secret sign. You can do it all day. It's a very beautiful way to live. That's all I have to say. Please make your kindness as big as you can. And on behalf of all the people in retreat and the caretakers, holy people, and the other people working so hard here and in other places, New York, grateful to you. We can't begin to pay back.